So usually when we talk about consumer safety, there's this this comforting expectation of physical certainty, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, think about engineering a bridge. You calculate the weight capacity, you test the tensile strength of the steel.
Account for wind resistance, yeah.
Exactly. And then the lead engineer just like points at the math on a whiteboard and says, it will hold.
Right. Because it's a binary outcome, it's grounded in the physical laws of the universe, and because of that, it is highly, highly predictable.
Right, it holds or it falls into the river, it's clean.
Yeah.
But then you step into the world of artificial intelligence, and suddenly that comforting certainty just completely
No,
evaporates.
it's gone totally.
Yeah. We are all strapped into this high-stakes, breakneck race of AI innovation, and it's just colliding head-on with our fundamental human need to, you know, just feel safe. So today, for you listening, we're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating stack of materials. We've got these incredibly dense academic frameworks on tech ethics, and also this really eye-opening seminar that's strictly focused on AI safety.
And there's a lot to unpack there.
There really is. Our mission today isn't just to look at what AI safety is on the surface, but to decode the invisible philosophical operating systems that govern exactly how the tech you use every single day actually gets built.
Right. And to set the stage for that, we really have to establish the baseline reality that the seminar anchors on right from the start, which
The
is
package deal, right?
exactly technical innovation guarantees new safety risks. Period. It's a non-negotiable package deal. You cannot separate the leap forward from the new hazard it creates.
Which means, I think, we have to start by looking at how you and I actually experience those hazards in the wild.
Yeah, the real world impact.
Because before we can get into the heavy philosophy of how engineers fix these problems, we need to talk about that visceral layer, the lived experience of an algorithmic failure.
And what's so fascinating and frankly, deeply unsettling about that lived experience is that when an AI makes a mistake, it rarely makes a human mistake. You know,
Right.
it makes a distinctly unhuman mistake.
It's like the uncanny valley of errors.
That's a great way to put it.
The classic example they brought up in the seminar is driverless cars, and specifically this concept of adversarial perturbations,
Right.
which is a mouthful. But for you listening, an adversarial perturbation is essentially just an innovative little input designed entirely to fool an AI's sensors.
Yeah, and we aren't talking about a massive smokescreen here.
No, we're talking about like a few carefully placed pixels on a digital screen, or a very specific, almost abstract pattern printed on a sticker and slapped onto a road sign.
Let's actually break down exactly why that works, because I think it highlights the fundamental difference between human cognition and machine learning.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack this.
So, to a human driver, right, a red octagonal stop sign with a random piece of tape on it is still undeniably a stop sign. Your brain processes the broader context, the intersection, the shape, the placement on the corner. But the AI's vision system isn't like seeing a physical object in a context.
It's just processing a massive grid, right?
Yes, a massive grid of numerical values and pixel weights.
So it's literally just doing math on a matrix of colors.
Precisely. And if researchers understand exactly how that mathematical model weights certain shapes and colors, they can design a perturbation.
The sticker.
The sticker, exactly. They design it to maliciously alter the math. By altering just a few specific pixels in the camera's view, the mathematical sum changes completely.
Wow.
So the AI doesn't see a stop sign with tape. The altered math forces the system to confidently register that object as, say, a 45 mile per hour speed limit sign.
Which is absolutely terrifying. I mean, it's one thing if a human driver gets distracted by their phone or blows through a stop sign because they're just exhausted, you know.
Right, we can empathize with that.
Exactly. We know what human fatigue feels like.
Yeah.
But it is completely jarring when a machine misinterprets reality entirely because of a geometric pattern on a sticker.
It's totally alien.
It shatters our trust. The logic of the failure is just so outside human intuition. So, I mean, how do engineers even begin to formalize and fix something that is so completely outside of our own common sense?
Well, that is the exact challenge of modern AI safety, because human intuition cannot predict these alien errors. I mean, we can't guess what random shadow will trigger a mathematical hallucination.
Right.
So engineers have to figure out how to mathematically define safety, quantify it, and then encode it directly into the algorithms themselves.
Which sounds impossible.
It's tough. To do this, they break the concept of safety down into two primary technical definitions: robustness and resilience.
Now, in everyday conversation, those are just synonyms. But here, they operate very differently, don't they?
Very differently. Let's start with robustness. This is an AI's ability to take what it learned in its highly controlled, sanitized training data and successfully apply it to new, messy, real-world information.
Okay.
It's the capacity to make the correct inference even when the data isn't identical to what it has seen before.
So, like, it's the ability to recognize that stop sign even if it's covered in an inch of snow.
Yes.
Or if, like, a tree branch is casting a weird, jagged shadow over it at sunset.
Exactly. It's that leap from the laboratory to the real world. But robustness is never guaranteed. So what happens when robustness fails? That brings us to resilience.
Okay, so what's the difference?
Resilience is all about having fallback systems. It's the architectural safety net built around the AI.
Ah, okay. The seminar used a great Tesla example here to illustrate this, I think. Let's say the AI's camera completely fails to read that snow-covered stop sign. That is a total failure of robustness, right?
Right. But if the overall vehicle system is resilient, a secondary, completely independent mechanism steps in.
Like the radar.
Exactly. Maybe the car's radar system detects the physical mass of cross traffic moving through the intersection ahead.
So the primary vision system failed, but the secondary radar system hits the brakes anyway for a completely different reason, saving the day.
Yes. That is resilience.
Which highlights two very different types of threats we're dealing with.
Yeah.
The researchers pointed out that obviously we have to worry about AI that is less than perfect, like the vision system missing the sign entirely.
Sure.
But the counterintuitive threat is that we also have to worry about AI that is too perfect.
Yeah, the beyond perfect AI, a system that executes its programmed goal so relentlessly, so flawlessly, and so efficiently that it causes massive collateral damage because it entirely lacks the broader human context to know when to stop.
And this leads to a detail in the research that just completely blew my mind.
The single scale.
Yes. When the industry tries to measure these risks, whether it's an incompetent AI or a relentlessly perfect one, they attempt to put all algorithmic errors on a single numerical scale.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, wait, so we are actually trying to mathematically flatten moral weight. We're putting a bad Netflix movie recommendation and a fatal Tesla crash on the exact same spreadsheet.
It's wild, I know.
How does that math even work?
It sounds absurd, perhaps even offensive to us. But from an engineering standpoint, this is the cold reality of what they call algorithmic value alignment.
Okay.
To a computer, there is no inherent concept of tragedy or mild annoyance. There are only mathematical loss functions or error rates. An error is simply a calculated deviation from the programmed goal.
So it's literally just a penalty score.
Exactly. Whether that deviation results in the algorithm wasting 2 hours of your Friday night on a terrible rom-com, or a catastrophic physical accident on the highway, the machine only understands it as a quantifiable variance.
That's just crazy to think about.
Right. The math might assign a penalty weight of 0.1 to the movie error and 10,000 to the car crash, but they are fundamentally sitting on the exact same mathematical continuum.
So the tension here is really between human ethics, which are, you know, deeply nuanced, emotional, situational, and machine representation, which demands rigid numerical values.
Hold on.
But if every algorithmic error is just a number on a spreadsheet, the immediate question is, who gets to decide what those numbers should be? Because looking at these sources, it seems like the engineering community is just completely fractured on how to value those risks.
Oh, it is entirely fractured. This raises arguably the most important question in tech today. It splits the AI community into two fiercely competing schools of thought, acceleration and precaution.
Let's start with the acceleration playbook.
So the core belief of the acceleration camp is neatly summarized in a single phrase. Innovation solves innovation problems.
Oh, okay. Let's unpack that. If a technology creates a risk, like those adversarial perturbations fooling the stop signs, the accelerationist answer isn't to stop the deployment and panic.
No, not at all.
The answer is to innovate faster. You build newer, more complex technology that can recognize and see through those perturbations.
Exactly. The role of technology is to constantly advance, continually moving faster to outpace the inevitable problems it leaves in its wake.
But doesn't that just create this endless, exhausting treadmill? I mean, if innovation is the only cure for the disease of technology, aren't the cures just going to constantly cause new, more complex diseases?
To an accelerationist, yes. That is a reality, and they accept it. You cannot get off the treadmill. You just have to run faster.
Why?
But then you have the precaution camp, which looks at that exact same treadmill and says, stop the machine.
Right. Precaution takes the exact opposite stance. This school of thought believes we must slow down, privilege safety above all else, and literally halt the deployment of new tech until we can foresee and resolve the potential risks.
Yeah, if we were to use an analogy
to it. It's like acceleration is trying to outrun a landslide you caused by building a faster, heavily armored car.
Okay, yeah.
While precaution is refusing to build the car at all until you've mapped the structural integrity of every single rock on the mountain.
That is a fantastic analogy. And the advocates for precaution make a claim that seems counterintuitive at first. They argue that this slower, methodical approach actually takes technology much further in the long run.
Well, sure, because if you launch a driverless car too early and it causes a highly publicized disaster, the public backlash, the inevitable lawsuits, the heavy-handed government regulation...
It's a nightmare.
That could freeze funding and set the whole industry back decades.
Precisely. By refusing to take a step forward until the safety risks are resolved, you avoid those catastrophic industry-killing setbacks.
Makes sense.
But the accelerationists have a very strong counterargument. They argue that mapping every rock on the mountain is literally impossible.
Because you don't know where the rocks are.
Right. Innovation, by definition, is the creation of things that are entirely unprecedented. Yeah. You cannot foresee risks that haven't even been invented yet.
You can't regulate the unknown.
Exactly. You have to discover the risks by deploying the technology and then fix them in real time.
So if both of these brilliant camps are looking at the exact same risks, the exact same unhuman errors and loss functions, why do they come to such wildly different conclusions? I mean, it has to be a fundamental difference in how they view the unknown itself.
It absolutely is. If we connect this to the deeper philosophical texts in our stack today, this divide is rooted in two classic ethical frameworks, deontology and consequentialism.
Let's look at the acceleration mindset first, which aligns with deontology. Acceleration actively values the unknown. The text compares this to a very specific type of traveler.
The Nepal example.
Right. Know. The person who buys a one-way ticket to Nepal simply because the unknown is thrilling. They aren't going because they read about a great restaurant or because they want to climb a specific mountain. They're going purely to discover what happens when they get there.
Yes. The unknown has a magnetic pull. In ethical terms, this is a deontological position. This means the act of innovation is intrinsically good simply because it is new. It has pure value in and of itself, regardless of what it eventually does in the world. The act of human discovery, the expansion of our capabilities, is worth doing for its own sake.
And precaution is the exact opposite type of traveler, the consequentialist.
Yes, precaution inherently fears the unknown. This is the traveler who books a 10-day itinerary 6 months in advance.
Oh, I know that person.
We all do. They know exactly what hotel they are staying in, what museum they are visiting at 2.5 p.m., and what they will eat for dinner on day 7.
The joy isn't in the surprise. The joy is in the execution of a safe plan.
Right. Ethically, this consequentialist view says the act of innovation has absolutely zero intrinsic value. Building a new machine is morally neutral. It is only considered good if it yields positive real-world consequences.
Like the invention of the steam engine. To a consequentialist, the steam engine wasn't inherently good just because it was a clever arrangement of metal and pressure.
Oh, not at all.
It was good because, over decades, it expanded human lifespans, increased comfort, and allowed societies to flourish.
So acceleration says the invention itself is the good part. Precaution says the result is the good part. Which leads us to the most striking and, frankly, difficult example from the academic frameworks. The toxin.
Oh, man. Okay. I have to admit, when I read this part, I was completely bewildered.
It's a tough one.
According to the text, under the strict acceleration framework, if a scientist in a chemistry lab invents a deadly, highly lethal new toxin that is considered a good and creative act of innovation, even if the very next step is to immediately lock that toxin in a lead box and never, ever deploy it.
Yep.
I have to push back here. How can anyone in any universe argue that creating a deadly poison is a good thing, even in a vacuum?
I know, it's a very difficult concept to swallow because it completely defies our modern results-obsessed mindset. But you have to look at the absolute purity of the deontological philosophy to the pure accelerationists. The discovery itself, the expansion of human knowledge, the unlocking of a new chemical compound or mathematical formula that has never existed in the universe before, that is an inherently creative act.
So it's about treating scientific discovery like art.
In a way, yes. Valuing discovery for its own sake means celebrating the breakthrough entirely apart from its application. A new puzzle has been solved. The knowledge itself is a triumph of human curiosity, even if the deployment of that knowledge would be disastrous.
So the creation of the poison is celebrated as a victory for the human mind, even as they literally weld the safe shut to protect the world from it.
Exactly.
And for the precaution mindset.
For precaution, inventing the toxin is inherently bad, full stop, because its only possible real-world consequence is death and harm. The ingenuity of the chemical compound doesn't matter at all. The bloody outcome is the only thing that registers on their moral scale.
Okay, so what does this all mean for you listening to this right now? Because it's easy to dismiss this as just abstract philosophy debated in university faculty lounges.
Right, but it's not.
Not at all. These lofty frameworks actually dictate the design, the rules, and the functionality of the apps you use on your phone every single day.
They absolutely do. These two philosophies map perfectly onto how digital systems are actually governed in the real world. Decentralization versus centralization.
Let's break that down. Decentralization lines up with acceleration, right?
Yes. In a decentralized system, you let innovation happen, you let the content flow freely, and you figure out the rules as you go. You empower the users to make decisions post facto, after the fact.
The sources use social media as the perfect modern battleground for this, specifically looking at X, formerly Twitter, and its community notes feature.
Right. Under the X model, a tweet goes live immediately. The platform's algorithm doesn't aggressively try to predict if the content is true, false, or harmful beforehand. It's allowed out into the wild.
And then what?
Then the users themselves vote on it and append corrective messaging or context later if needed. It responds to the chaos of the environment as it happens.
Oh, I see. It's the innovation solves innovation problems mindset applied to digital content.
Exactly.
The bad tweet is the problem. The community-generated note is the innovative, fast-moving solution.
By contrast, centralization aligns perfectly with the precautionary approach. You try to predict the issues before they happen and empower a central authority, like a trust and safety team, to set strict overarching rules beforehand.
Dictating exactly what is and isn't allowed to exist on the platform.
Right.
And the readings point to Blusky as an example of this centralized, precautionary approach, where an authority structure builds a walled garden to filter the danger before it ever reaches the user.
Yeah.
Now, it's worth noting an interesting, if somewhat controversial, connection the author makes here.
Right.
The text explicitly links this top-down, centralized moderation style to left-wing political ideology and the decentralized style to right-wing or libertarian ideology.
And that's how the author frames it, yes.
Right, and I want to be super clear here for you listening. Our goal today is absolutely not to debate whether those political labels are fair or accurate. We are strictly staying out of the politics here. We're not taking sides.
Absolutely not.
But it is fascinating just to see how the author views these underlying engineering philosophies as direct extensions of our broader political worldviews.
It's a vital connection to make in the context of the source material. The value for us is seeing the through line from abstract safety philosophy to the actual mechanics of platform moderation.
Exactly.
Centralized authority prioritizes preventing harm before it occurs, which is pure precaution. Decentralized user moderation prioritizes immediate flow and corrects course later, which is pure acceleration.
Which raises an incredibly revealing question for you, the listener. Think about the apps on your home screen right now. Which platform model do you inherently trust more?
It's a great question.
Do you prefer the Wild West where the community polices itself after the fact, or the walled garden where someone is filtering the danger before it reaches you? Because your preference for an app might actually reveal your deepest philosophical leanings about moral uncertainty.
You might be a strict consequentialist and not even know it.
Right. It's amazing how our daily, seemingly mundane habits reflect these massive historical ethical divides.
It really is.
And this has been such a journey today. We started by looking at the visceral, lived experience of jarring AI errors. That completely unsettling feeling when a machine misreads a few pixels and swerves a car.
The unhuman errors.
Yeah. And we saw how engineers try to tame that alien chaos by quantifying our complex moral weight onto cold mathematical spreadsheets.
And we traced all of that down to its absolute roots, a fundamental clash between two ways of existing in the world.
Chasing the magnetic pull of the unknown or carefully mapping our steps to ensure we never fall.
But before we let you go, we want to push this just a little bit further.
Yeah, let's do it.
We've talked a lot about the theories, but let's put this into a hypothetical reality. I want you to consider this dilemma.
Okay.
Imagine an AI system is developed tomorrow. It has a 1% chance of causing an unstoppable global catastrophe, total destruction.
Okay, terrifying.
But It has a 99% chance of curing all known human diseases within a decade. Does the ethical obligation to save billions of lives demand that we accelerate and turn the machine on? Or does the mere existence of that 1% risk of annihilation demand absolute precaution, forcing us to lock it in a box forever?
Wow. We started this deep dive talking about how we expect safety to be like engineering a bridge, where the math just works, the steel is tested, and you know without a doubt that it will hold.
Right.
But as we've seen today, when it comes to the frontier of artificial intelligence, the math doesn't just tell us if the bridge will hold. It forces us to ask if we have the right to build it at all. We encourage you to mull over that impossible choice. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.